is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Lawrence Chapman, and it is so great to reconnect, and I'm really looking forward to talking with you about your soundtrack for Pendragon, the new game from Inkle Studios.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
The concept of the game and the look of the game is so unusual. The players get to choose to be either Guinevere or Lancelot to rejoin King Arthur and rally as much support as they can from villagers and knights, because Camelot has fallen and everyone's scattered to the four winds. And there's just so many directions that the game can take. And so how early in the process were you brought in to work on the music?
I think fairly early. I remember getting I got a call from, no, it was an email from John, November last year, so that's whatever, 2019. And I was, you know, usually when I see an email from John or Joe, that's quite a sort of like, oh, right, what's this? and the subject header was a theme for a new project. So, you know, it was brilliant, doubly exciting. I think I seem to remember getting the message at about 10 o'clock. I checked my mail sort of last thing before going to bed, which was, you know, the stupidest time to check it, because then, of course, instantly I wanted to start writing and coming up with some ideas. But luckily, I resisted the temptation to head to my studio there and then in the dark on a November on a November evening. Yeah, so it was November. Yeah, November onwards is when we started.
Wow. You know, there have been so many musical, I don't know, King Arthur has inspired so much music, from, you know, Henry Purcell to some epic films and,
yes,
and Monty, yep, Python. And so what did you think about to make your music not sound like any of that?
Not listen to it. re-listen to it. Although I suppose when I did avoid the Purcell, the King Arthur, because I thought if I start to do, you know, things will subconsciously seep in if I'm not too careful. And luckily, John made some good suggestions straight away. He talked about Carmina Burana and stuff from the Musketeer, the TV series from a couple of years ago. But those suggestions are usually sort of springboards, and it's not, you know, they never say we want it to sound like this. It's just sort of this sort of thing. Is what they're pointing at, and usually it's actually a good idea of what they don't want it to sound like. If that makes sense. When that, you know, you point someone in the direction of, you know, a couple of pieces, and it'll stop you going down the wrong avenue to begin with.
Yeah. Well, I was curious about what sort of things that you felt, you know, wouldn't have been a good fit. Carmina Burana was an interesting suggestion, because they actually used O Fortuna in Excalibur, that King Arthur film. Somebody, Arthur, maybe is galloping full bore through this forest in Wales, and here, O Fortuna. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, the other thing I was aware of, but couldn't help being aware of it, was First Night, which has Jerry Goldsmith score, which I must have bought. I don't know. I've known that very well for a long time. So that was another score which I kind of. I couldn't not be influenced by it, because I knew it so well. Whereas things like the King Arthur Purcell, I don't know so well, wasn't so familiar with. But yeah, there's usually a bit of some sort of Jerry Goldsmith influence in whatever I write anyway. So that was another sort of springboard.
Sure. Well, that worked out well then.
There's a place called Sheepcote Valley up in sort of North Brighton, and that's actually where the opening chord sequence came into my head. But it was December, so it was very dark. This was in the evening. And so I knew I wouldn't be able to remember the chord sequence all the way home. So I had to, I think my phone battery was dying. So I had to grab Zoe, my fiance's phone, and just say, I need to hum at your phone. So that's how the first bit of the Pendragon soundtrack basically was created. It was me humming into Zoe's phone so I could send myself the message so I wouldn't forget it by the time I was back home. And then I spent the next 20 minutes of the walk sort of trying to remember it, but at the same time trying to come up with a melody that would fit over those chords. So poor old Zoe's walking in the dark with a dog and a fiance who's just sort of mildly humming and just going shh every now and again. So yeah, thanks to her patience, we were able to get the theme safely home.
That's fascinating. I've heard a lot of stories of composers singing into their own phones, but never having to borrow their fiance's.
Yeah, I looked at it and I thought, it's at 9%, it's cold. And as soon as I press the record button, it's just going to die. And then I'll be annoyed and then the theme will disappear.
That's a great story. What a patient fiance she must be.
Yes, I don't know how she puts up with me. Constantly at the piano, scribbling things. Yeah.
Well, think of all the stuff that must have been lost because Beethoven couldn't sing into his phone. You know, it's just
that's where the Tenth Symphony is. You know, it's sitting. You know, in a phone that didn't exist.
Mm-hmm. The horn seems like such a natural fit, and the horn player that you got to perform it is just absolutely phenomenal, Jack Pilcher May.
Great.
Yeah, he really is. My son used to play the horn, so I know just how hard it is. And
it's so hard. It's a really hard instrument to play. I mean, I've never done it, but everything I've read about it, or you know, talked to horn players briefly, like, how do you do this? No, it's a incredible instrument. And yes, he plays it fantastically. So I was, I was very relieved. You know, because I was determined to write something that would work well for the horn and would be more interesting than basically just fifths the whole time, or you know, traditional sort of fanfare writing.
Sure. Or here we're heading over the woods, over the forests and fields, following foxes, and yeah.
Yes, it's got to be bouncy, and there's got to be a bit more sort of interesting melodic stuff to it. And he plays it very well. And yeah, what I wanted to do from the outset, if possible, was start the whole thing with a horn sort of fanfare on its own, because I quite like, you know, as soon as John started describing what the whole, you know, the whole setting of the game would be. And I did think horn almost straight away, but then more specifically thought actually just solo horn, something with a sort of somber fanfare at the beginning would be a really nice way of starting things off.
Yeah, and what's so interesting about it is it's got a real timeless feel to it, that theme. I mean, the game is set in 7th century England, but with that music, it's a really good fit because, you know, to be honest, we don't know what music from that period even sounded like, but there's such a noble and heroic quality to that theme and to the melody that Jack plays. And so was that the first thing that you wrote?
Let me just get this right the way around. It was, funnily enough, I think the last thing I wrote. And technically, I didn't write it, but I did write it. Well, I've been trying to find something that I could put at the beginning that would work like that. So the very first thing I did is actually track two on the CD, on the album, which is it's just called Pendragon. It's the main theme. And then at the end, the Camlann Passacaglia, I take that theme and slow it right down. It goes into a different time signature. It's played much more nobly. And then when I was playing that on its own without all the other stuff that goes on around it, I thought, that's the fanfare I was looking for at the beginning. You just strip everything away from it and have the horn play that melody solo, and that's what I was looking forward to go at the beginning. So it was quite strange that fanfare I wanted, I didn't actually actively write it until the end, and even when I did write it, I hadn't realized I was writing it. Does that make any sense?
Well, it does, because sometimes I think your subconscious is busy chewing away on things while your active brain is kind of working on more immediate stuff. So
yes, yeah. I mean, because John and Joe hadn't said at any point, can we have a solo horn fanfare to go at the beginning? So it wasn't on my list of things to do. And then, yes, as I say, as I did the final part of the Passacaglia, I thought, oh, wait a minute, there it is. That's the horn melody, which I can use, you know, in a big form at the end of the final cue of the soundtrack. And also on its own, it works as an introduction.
Yeah, and the scale of the instrumentation is so perfect. This game has a really interesting look. It looks like a board game, and it's never crowded.
Like chase at a funny angle, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's never crowded with dozens and dozens of knights and archers battling each other. It's really intimate. And so your choice of using a really small ensemble, I think, was a really good one too. And it fits really well with the game.
Yes, it does. I think it's because it's quite medieval in its tone, if you like. Well, of course, the whole thing is Arthurian. So there, in a way, you can sort of, I can get out of it by saying they wouldn't have had big symphony orchestras in the time of King Arthur. They would have had small bands of, you know, roaming troubadours or whatever. So I'm going to have my own bunch of troubadours, and there'll be quite a small group, which on some occasions can sound quite big. So yeah, the ensemble size, I think, worked. It works quite well.
How did you visualize the role of the music? Because, you know, it's an RTS game, and the players could, in theory, take a really long time to figure out what they're going to do next. And so there's really no way to know how quickly a player is going to get through that particular level or how long they're going to spend talking with an NPC. So how did you think about your music in that role?
I didn't really, not directly, because John and Joe are still, you know, they're making the game, they're constructing the game, as I'm writing. So I'm usually only getting screenshots, or, you know, small passages of video. but it's much more them describing what they like that is the not the inspiration, that's the wrong word, but the sort of, it's basically writing to the brief. They say what it is they kind of want to do, and I write to that as best I can.
Wow. Oh.
that was a very good answer, I don't think. I'm not sure.
No, it is. And this is the third game that you've provided the music for. And so I'm wondering how your collaboration has kind of evolved with them.
I suppose actually, one thing, I think I'm much less, I was going to say fearless in what I send them. I think probably fearless isn't quite the right word, but I worry less when I send them stuff, particularly, you know, when I send them the first couple of drafts for things like Sorcery. These are like the first guys I've written stuff for properly. And so it's a little bit, you know, it can make you a little bit nervous when you think, I don't know what they're going to like. Will they like this? How will they respond? But now I tend to be able to know which pieces they're going to like and which they won't like. Or usually if they don't like a piece, it's for the reason I thought they wouldn't like it. I think we did a good couple of versions of the main theme. I think I sent them three different ideas at least. And I think I was fairly sure they'd like the one that they ended up with. I think actually one of them, Dream of Camelot. So that was an idea for the main theme, because I thought if they want something slow moving and noble, that kind of works in that vein as well. But they said, oh no, we that doesn't quite work for what we need as the main theme, but can we keep it for something else? So then that became that other piece.
Thank you.
Well, it's interesting because as I've been playing it and then watching playthroughs, it seems as though the music is just kind of a companion. You know, it's just there, you know, as if you had your own little band of troubadours, like following you around, like, you know, Sir Robin had in Holy Grail. And so.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, now I'm thinking of the Monty Python.
Oh, sorry.
Definitely try to avoid that one, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, mainly it's writing to what Inkle tells me they want to do. What do they want to accomplish out of the music? What does it need to do? And I think also to sort of bind the adventure together so that you feel like you have had, yeah, like you say, you had a friend with you, you've had the similar music going through the game as it develops. I'd hope to try and get that, you know, the Arthur's Call, which is what that main theme. I'd hope to have it in every track in some sort of guise, but I couldn't get it to work compositionally, and also it became boring. Everything was just sort of this, a reference to it. It may not have been boring to listen to, but it was quite boring to keep using the theme in the same way.
Yeah, of course. It's tricky because especially when you've got a theme like that, that's a real standout. As subtle as you might try to be with it, if you overuse it, then it's like, okay, we get it.
Yeah, I think even if you can disguise it quite cunningly, it's still, as you're writing it, it becomes a bit of a, you're just stuck to something. It becomes a restriction more than something that can help you create.
Yeah, of course. One of the tracks that really struck me because it doesn't sound like anything else, and I don't think I've gotten far enough in the game to really see how it works, but The Lady of the Lake is just phenomenal, and I don't know how you did it, but it really sounds watery. So.
It's just harp. All you have to do is just get a harp, just get a good harpist. So that's it. You're off to the races. I was quite lucky. I came across Olivia Jagers, who's she's a freelance harpist who works in London, and she does remote recording. So she was on the list straight away. So yeah, I was very lucky to have her playing it. Just meant I had to do a bit of research on how to write for harp first, because as some of you may be aware, some people may be aware, they have the pedal settings, which we have to sharpen and flat the strings using your feet. So it doesn't quite work like a piano does. So yeah, that was an interesting little task to sort of keep myself occupied with working out how to write for it. And then luckily I got a very good harpist to perform it. So yeah. Thank you.
it really is incredible because it, like I said, it sounds watery. It reminded me a little bit of Debussy and Ravel and.
Well, that's what. Yeah, that's the, one of the pieces I had to. I was about to say next. What is it? It's Debussy and is it a trio, isn't it, for viola, harp, and flute?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I always think it's something else. No, yeah. So I studied that, you know, a great deal to get the hang of the harp writing particularly. And then, yeah, cello popped up because coronavirus basically meant I couldn't get a viola into a recording studio. So I had to change things to make it suitable for a cello. So, yeah, that's a weird sort of coronavirus change to the Pendragon soundtrack.
Wow. I was curious about what sort of challenges the pandemic threw at you because... You know, a lot of musicians and a lot of composers that I've been talking with, either they end up using samples, the best samples they can find, because no musicians can go into studios, or they come up with other creative ways of doing things. So what sort of curveballs did you have to work around with the virus?
Well, luckily, we got most of the string recording, which is where I needed, you know, groups of people in a room. We got that done back in February, I think. So that was all done before any kind of lockdown was instilled. So I was quite lucky in that regard. But yeah, then it became a little bit more complicated. There was, Rachel Shakespeare will kill me for saying this, there was a mistake on one of the tracks that she sent over. I think one of the performers had been misreading a note, which I could have actually marked a little bit clearer. So all of a sudden I had 12 bars of music, which was all wrong. And I had to go back to Rachel and say, can you get this recorded? Redone because there's a mistake, an E flat and it should have been an E natural or something. And so it meant getting the quartet, or I think we got two people back in the room one at a time to re-record the tracks to correct this mistake. So that was one side of it. I suppose another thing would have been, well, the Passacaglia, the final track, I would have preferred to use a few more string instruments, but I had to use three cellos and just have Rachel overdub play over herself because we couldn't get a quartet into a room. It had to be just one person. So I thought, well, a bit of a challenge as well, actually. It's an interesting challenge to see if I can get three cellos to do what I need a string quartet to do instead. But luckily, Rachel's a very good cellist, and she performed it admirably. So there we go.
That's phenomenal, because it sounds like you do have three different cellists playing it. So so that really worked out well. And you worked with the Laos Strings again. You also worked with them on Heaven's Vault. And so it must be nice to know the talent and know the musicians that are going to be playing your music.
It is. It's great. Because Rachel, she sort of broadened out into being sort of, you know, a musician contractor as well. So I was able to just say to her, do you know any, could you get me a horn player? Oh, and also I need a clarinet player. And could you, and she comes back with these amazing players. So that's fantastic, because actually it does take a lot of, a great deal of time to track down, really good players. So if you have someone who's, doing that for you, yeah, that's brilliant. I mean, the shame was with this recording process is that I missed out on every composer's favorite part, which is, being in the recording studio or on the stage, with the musicians. It's basically why we do what we do, to hear these incredible performers bring what we've done to life. So I suppose, to have to miss that and not to see the, not actually meet the people playing your music, was a disappointment. But
yeah, I can imagine. And were you able to use Zoom or Skype at all to kind of be a fly on the wall, or did you just trust them to record it?
Oh, I trusted. I would have trusted them all to get on with it. I can't remember. There was a reason why I couldn't see the horn recording and the other instrumentalists, but I can't remember now what it was. But I think Rachel was sending me videos. I think she sent me a couple of videos over WhatsApp. And I think I definitely saw the clarinetist and Jack play. And I think I just saw, a couple of phrases from Jack, and I thought, oh, good, right, we're fine. Yep, done, sorted. Not a problem. And then, the harp sessions, they were over Zoom. So Olivia had a camera set up in her studio, and we did. It wasn't the best of connections, and I think it took about, I think after about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, we had to sort of give up trying to do it remotely. And I think she got the gist of what I wanted. And we just had to turn the cameras off, and she got on with it and did it without me making suggestions all the time and annoying her.
One of the things that I found doing my show at home, as opposed to in my radio studio where I would have done it, is the noise, just the outside world kind of intruding. And I'm wondering if you had to deal with any of that with all these remote recordings coming in.
No, I don't think we did. Although I suppose they would have been edited out. Rachel at Brooksby Music, Rachel and Richard have got a, they've got a proper studio set up. So I think there's very limited, sound penetration from the outside. And I suppose Olivia maybe has something similar. Or was they just able to edit out any passing fire engines that went past? Or overflying planes or helicopters or,
Yeah, it's amazing how there are some noises that just cut right through. Like here, it's lawnmowers, and
yeah, we got quite a few sirens in Brighton. That's the usual. It's the usual thing that will interrupt anything. It's like there's an ambulance station just up the road, which doesn't help. So.
Oh yeah, well you did some performing on the soundtrack too with the Pendragon Fantasia, and I would love to know. Well, I haven't heard it in the game. But it's just so beautiful. It makes me wish I was really a way better pianist so I could manage it. But tell me about that track.
It's sort of a, I suppose it's a, like a, sounds very grand, but like a Lawrence Chapman trademark sort of thing, which I sort of started. I did it with Heaven's Vault because I just started improvising on it and then basically hit record. Got some of these ideas down and was able to, I can't remember now how I wrote it. I think I sketched some of it down, improvised some of it, and then recorded it. But I thought it would be a nice thing to sort of continue, for most soundtracks as much as I possibly can. It'd be nice to do a sort of 5-minute piano piece at the end where I try and combine some of the themes and just improvise and play around with them. I bet now I've said that on the next two soundtracks, it'll be impossible for whatever reason to do a piano solo or something of them. But that's just me improvising and to some degree, and then some of it I had to sit down and work out when I need to get back from one key to another. I can't improvise that. I have to sit down and work out chord sequences. But yeah, as far as I know, it probably won't feature in the game. That's just something I came up with at the end and popped on the soundtrack.
It's really lovely, and it's just it's kind of a summary of, well, it's like those, you know, those fantasias or that List would write, you know, kind of like a quick tour through Don Giovanni, that kind of thing. And so,
yeah, it's like a nice little, I'd imagine, well, it's 5 minutes long. So if, you know, if this was a film, that would take up, you know, that would be the end credits, wouldn't it? It'd be like a sort of, you know, a suite of themes, which would just go while people are trailing out of the cinemas back when we're allowed to go to the cinema.
Right.
Thank you.
I think it's really cool that you released the sheet music for Heaven's Vault, and I'm wondering if you've got plans to release the sheet music for Pendragon too.
Yeah, I finished a batch this afternoon. At the moment, it's just going to be I'm going to do the full scores, so that you've got that was more surprising. That was surprisingly more popular, if that's a sentence, than I thought it would be. I think a good few people downloaded the full score of Heaven's Vault, so I put up the Pendragon one. I've just finished the piano reduction, so any pianist can have a go. And then we'll see. What I might do is maybe just suggest that if people want to a certain, you know, if they want, can I have the horn music or can I have the clarinet version, then I might do that, because it takes a little bit of time to edit them all together. And putting it very bluntly, what I don't want to do is spend 2 days, you know, arranging something for flute and piano and then no one buys it. In the nicest way, that's not a good use of my time. So I might leave a little note or something on the sheet music page and just say, email me requests for what you want. I was thinking the other thing I might do is put up some of my sketches as well, because, you know, to see, so people can see how it developed, because there's lots of retakes of some of them. So I don't know, anyone who's particularly some music geeks might want to go over the 15 pages of sketches that, you know, were the Camlann Passacaglia before it was condensed down to the eventual six or whatever it is. So yes, short answer to your question, there'll be some sheet music. Hopefully by the time this goes out, there'll be something on the website.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I love the idea of putting your sketches up there too, because I think finding out what the process was to get to the finished result is really fascinating. You know, it's like looking at a complicated math problem and, you know, show your notes and
yes, you only get points. You only get points if you show you're working. Well, it's it was some, I suppose it's fascinating afterwards. I know that the Camlann Passacaglia took ages, and I think this is probably towards the end of lockdown or things were beginning to ease a little bit when I was writing it. And it turns out actually that being sealed inside your flat isn't actually conducive to writing very good music. We have this image, composers sort of have an image of being stuck inside, you know, their studio for, you know, long periods of time, particularly thinking, you know, like Beethoven, you know, doing mad things, wearing only one pair of socks or one pair of socks, wearing one sock instead of stomping around singing the Missa Solemnis, that kind of thing. But actually you realize that when you're deprived of, you know, people to go and see, and the cafes are closed and pubs are closed, that actually your mind almost sort of starts to shrink a little bit. You start to suffer. So yeah, actually I was realizing towards the end of the process that actually I wasn't writing particularly well, because you know, life had sort of shrunk. So it had that sort of effect. So there are loads of different versions of the Camlann Passacaglia, because it just took so long to get it sounding just right. Unfortunately as well, I got a very rare email from Inkle as well, saying, I think it was version 3, I think, on my list anyway. And they said, sorry, I don't think we like it. This would have been something that I'd spent days trying to get right. And I think, well, fortunately, they were very specific about what they didn't like about it, and they were able to describe why they didn't like it. And then I could fix those problems quite quickly. But yeah, maybe that's why I want to put these sketches up, to say, look, this is how long it took. It took ages.
Yeah, wow. Well, so what made it right? I mean, I would think a Passacaglia, just as a general, you know, project, would be tough because of the ground that gets repeated over and over. But was that the kind of the stumbling block, or what were some of the things that made it such a challenge?
Why did I make it so difficult for myself? because the ground bass is the Pendragon theme. So you've just got, hang on, what's my keyboard? So that's that doesn't repeat like that, but yeah, so it does that massively slowed down. And then what I wanted to do was have that. So I needed that to work over that bass. And at the same time, I wanted the flute and clarinet to be playing counter melodies. So I basically had to make four melodies that would work over the top of each other. And then when it comes to the big sort of, you know, the breakthrough moment about halfway through, when the horn comes in with that tune, I then had to see if I could fit in, I think, a flute and a clarinet part doing additional parts over that. So it did get quite complicated.
Wow.
Maybe it wasn't just me writing badly because of lockdown. It was actually just a stupidly difficult thing to try and do with such a small group of players. This is the same piece, of course, where I don't have a string section. I only have three cellos. So yeah, madness started to descend towards the end of the process.
And no pubs were open. So.
Yes, exactly. No pubs were open. I was sealed inside. You must finish this. You can't even have a drink once you've done it.
Wow. You know, besides ruling out the composers or the ideas, the styles of music that you didn't think would work, who were some composers that you kind of looked at for inspiration?
Well, in terms of it, maybe not exactly inspiration, but more the handling of the instruments, since I knew the horn would play a large role, I'd been going through a big Britain phase at the beginning of this year. So I was going through the Serenade for tenor, horn and strings. And so many of his pieces, he's very good at making a smaller ensemble sounding bigger than it actually is. Particularly some of he did documentary scores for the BBC, back in the 30s, I think. And he had, you know, quite small little groups, but they sound, you know, almost orchestral. Britain came in a lot, doing some, you know, research of how he did those two things, writing for horn and handling the smaller ensembles. Mahler, horn writing is fantastic. And Oliver Nussen's horn concerto, which I love anyway, but spent hours poring over the score just to, you know, really see what can you make a horn do. So yeah, those composers were sort of very useful. Those pieces were very useful.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about it in that way, that whatever composing problem you might have, somebody else has solved it, and they've solved it in a few different ways. So
I mean, actually, during the writing the Passacaglia, there's Walton's Second Symphony, I think, ends with a Passacaglia. So that was useful because I could see, there were problems there that I was coming across. And luckily, I was, you know, looking through the score for that, and found out actually you can be a lot more liberal with what you do with the bass. It doesn't have to always stick to the same rhythmic pattern, and you can do some quite interesting things with it. I think he does things like invert it and put it backwards, so you can get really quite creative. So yeah, that was quite useful in that respect as well.
I bet. Well, I'm going to take a look at your sketches, and I might tackle the piano version of the Pendragon Fantasia. And Lawrence, it has been so much fun to talk with you about this. So thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you. That was a pleasure. Thank you very much. Thank you.